Okay, Parshat Balocha takes place in the second year after Yetzias Mitzrayim. There is a mitzvah for Aaron to light the menorah. It's made from a single piece of beaten gold. Now, it's interesting. Why is it mentioned over here? The construction of the menorah already happened in Parshat Tetzaveh. And now, all of a sudden, in Parshat Bamidbar, we are discussing Aaron lighting the menorah. So Rashi quotes a midrash that Aaron was depressed. Parshat Naso, the Nesiim all brought karbanot, part of the Chanukat HaMizbech, but his shevet didn't get a chance to partake in the Chanukat HaMizbech, and therefore the shevet Levi, the Kohanim, were giving now this specific mitzvah of lighting menorah. The Ramban asks, well, then why dafka the menorah? I mean, you want to give them something. I get it. You missed out on the Chanukat HaMizbech. Why dafka the menorah? So the Ramban says the menorah actually symbolizes a future event, that Aaron's descendants will take part in the lighting of the menorah that we would refer to as Hanukkah, that they led the rebellion against the Greeks, rededicated the Beit HaMikdash, and the symbol of that holiday is the Chanukiah, is the lighting of the menorah. And that is the allusion, according to the Ramban, in our Parsha, in Parshat Bahalotcha. Now, Sheva Levi, who was chosen to replace the Bechorim, now undergo a Tahara process. The process includes sprinkling of the Mechatas. The Mechatas, we've already said, is the spring water mixed together with the ashes of the Paraduma. Shaving all body hair, and Tvila in the mikvah for both them and their clothing. They also had to bring a karban ola and a karban chatat. Now the karban chatat is not a sin offering, but it's like we said earlier once, chitoy, which means purification. So this is all part of the purification process.
Every
Levi at this time had to go through this. And Bnei Yisrael is brought, according to the Chizkuni, not every single Jew, but the Bechorim, the firstborn, are brought to the Mishkan. And they do smicha on the heads of Levim. They place their hands on the heads of Levim, the firstborn, the Bechorim, according to the Chizkuni. But it says Bnei Yisrael. They're brought to the Mishkan. They place their hands, press on the heads of Levim. And then Aaron does tnufa. Now what's tnufa? Waving of 22,000 Levim. Okay, imagine the strength and stamina that Aaron had to have to pick up each Levi and wave him around like we do with a lulav. You know, next, next. And I'm just picking up one. I know they pick up one. You pick up one. I asked Rav Nemitzel, I said, do you think it just means he moved them? And he said, no, he lifted them. He said, it was an ace.
He was a fat guy.
He did. Even if it wasn't a fat guy, but the 22,000 guy, I think all of us are too tired to lift anything. So Rav Nemitz says, no, obviously it was a nace, and he lifted and moved 22,000 Levim. Now, the Levim were seen as a carbon for the sin at the Egel, and they're, you know, they're the replacement for the firstborn. So what do we do usually carbon? We do smicha on the head, pressing that on the head, waving of the carbon. So that's what's done now to Sheva Levi, right? There's putting on the head, and there's what's done. Yeah, that's something else. Here's like on the karban, you press that on the karban, and this was done now to Levim. Now, besides transporting the Mishkan in the Midbar, Levim had other jobs in the Beit HaMikdash. In the Midbar, it was sort of just transporting, assembling and taking apart the Mishkan. In the Beit HaMikdash, Levim had three jobs, all beginning with the Shin. They were Shomrim. What's Shomrim?
Guards,
watchmen. They were 21 different locations in the Beit HaMikdash. They were Shoarim. What do you think that means? From the word Shar. Gatekeepers. They were gatekeepers. Opening and closing of the gates. Okay? And they were very good, very good. You could get the job because you're not going to get the next job. Shorarim. They were the choir. They were in the choir. Okay? So these were the choir. Levim were in the choir, singing, playing musical instruments. Now, the ages that they were drafted, They were drafted from age 30 to 50, but already from age 25, you can volunteer and be there. This was what the Levium did. One of these three jobs. Rabina once joked, he goes, and he's as a Levi, so he said, I'm certainly not going to be in the choir. So he's saying, oh, I'll go one of the others. I'll drive the Kohen Gadol back and forth to, you know, wherever he needs to go, but I'm not going to be in the choir.
I just wonder if I can't be in the choir either.
Okay.
I want to be all the church.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Now, Soloveitchik is a name of a Levi, and it means a nightingale. You know, like, so probably the Soloveitchik family, because they were like, I guess they were singers. The Nightingale, that's a Soloveitchik name. Yes, Ariel, what did you say? What do they do? I don't know. But Rashi does learn from 25 to 30, you have to give it 5 years to try learning before you give up. Because they were trained for like 5 years before. Yeah. Also, all Sheva Levi were also supposed to be teachers. This is like in the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah. Now, B'nai Yisrael were commanded now on Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year to bring a Karban Pesach. Since Parshat B'Midbar began with Iyar of the second year, and now in Vahalotcha, we're dealing with Nisan of the second year, we see that Ein Muktam Muchar B'Torah, there is no chronological order to the Torah. Okay, Perek Aleph dealt with the second month of the second year. Perek Tet deals with the first month of the second year. This is the only case where we're obligated to say it, but it is brought down in the Gemara based on this Ein Muktam Muchar B'Torah, and many Mefarshim use this maxim liberally. Anytime something seems to be a little bit difficult, they say, oh, well, maybe this happened out of order. While others are very makbid to say, look, if there's no good reason to switch around the order, why would I assume it's written out of order? Here we know it's written out of order. The question would be, why? So why is it written out of order? So Rashi quotes a Midrash that says it would have been said this was the only Karba Pesach we actually brought. So to start off Pesach, Sefer Midbar, bringing the only Karban Pesach that we ever brought in the Midbar, and then we never brought another Karban Pesach, so we don't want to start off with something bad. Now, the truth is it's a little bit weak because you're not allowed to bring the Karban Pesach if you're uncircumcised. And since we were traveling in the Midbar, whenever the cloud moved, we didn't know if we could stay in one place. Medically, it was not approved to have a circumcision, because if you did and you'd have to move, it could be unhealthy. So therefore, people said, look, I don't know if I'll have to move. So they delayed the circumcision. And if so, why is this considered disparaging? They only brought one carbon. They really couldn't bring more than one carbon. Yes.
Circumcision is not really a problem, it's for baby. So, anyway, a baby that has 8 days, even if he has a circumcision, you take him with.
So, every member of your family has to be circumcised for you to eat from the Karban Pesach. You have to make sure that everyone is.
In Egypt, they were not circumcised?
No, they did for this first one. They all got circumcised for this one, but then they didn't anymore. They weren't in Egypt. Okay, Sheva Levi was, but no one else was. So now they do this, and they have a Karban Pesach, but then for all the remaining years, they didn't give anyone circumcisions. But you could say, that's okay. They weren't allowed to. So I'll tell you this, two ideas and one idea. Two ideas. The first idea, I don't remember, I didn't write down who said it, but you could say it was still disparaging because the 40 years was only because of the sin of the Meraglim. So we don't want to then recall, oh, you know why we had to be in the Midbar traveling over 40 years? Because of the sin of the Meraglim. So therefore, again, we don't want to start off with this. Or the Lubavitcher Rebbe says a beautiful idea. The very next halacha that we're going to deal with is Pesach Sheni. That's the next parsha. That's the next segment in our parsha. Says Lubavitcher Rebbe, B'nai Yisrael should have argued like they did at Pesach Sheni. They should have said, God, we want to do bris milah on our kids. give us the opportunity. Tell us when we're going to be stationary for X amount of time. Don't keep, you know, saying, oh, surprise, we're moving again. Say, okay, anyone wants to do bris mila or kids? We're going to stay stationary for the next 6 months. You guys are good? Good. Okay, bris mila, go for it. So they should have argued. They should have pushed and said, why should we not be able to give a bris mila to our kids? So that's Lubavitcher Rebbe's idea, which fits nicely with segue into the next idea, and that is Pesach Sheni. Here it is. They break the Korban Pesach, but some people were tamei meis. They were defiled from being involved with a dead body. Machlokets in the Gemara. Why? Anyone know? Why were they? Who died? So one opinion is not another Benaviyo. We're not. That's not the case. Either it was a meis mitzvah. Someone died. There was no relatives. Someone got involved. Or they were transporting the Aron, the coffin of Yosef. Now, says in the Pasuk, they responded, Lama Nigara? Why should we miss out? Explains the Sforno, we were Osek B'mitzvah. And Osek B'mitzvah is what? Patam in a mitzvah. We did what we're supposed to do. God, you told us, Mace Mitzvah, drop everything and take care of it. Or transport the Aron of Yosef. So I'm doing exactly what you told me to do. Now you're going to tell me you can't do Korban Pesach? We don't want that. We want to be able to do the mitzvah. I always think of this when someone says, oh, great, we have a chasan and we get to skip tachton. You know, where are the people saying, Lama Nigara? Why are we missing on a tachton? There they are, wearing that colorful tie now on Rosh Chodesh Adar. But like, Lo Nigara, why should we miss out? Yes.
How come Mace Mitzvah is different than bring Yosef around?
And Mace Mitzvah, I'm just saying the usual definition of Mace Mitzvah. You're right, this could be a type of Mace Mitzvah. I agree with you. I mean, the problem in the Gemara is we don't know of people dying until we have the Chet of the Meraglim. So the Gemara is trying to figure out, so how did people become Tamei L'Mace? Okay? The people who were Tamei L'Mace, for another video, we know who they were. Right? So it seems to be random people that were Tamei L'Mace that came to Moshe and complained. Why were they Tamei L'Mace? Those are the two opinions in the Gemara.
Don't we also know from the end where we said the entire generation had to die before we even got to...
Yeah, but this happens before that. This is before that happened. Yes?
I don't know if it's probably too far, but don't remember the story of the guy like breaking Shabbat or the guy Tristan Mishael?
We have the Mekoshe Sheitzim.
How long is basic,
I mean,
days?
It would only 7 days.
Yeah,
right? So, I mean, something that just happened right now in the second year. Okay? Now, Moshe doesn't know the answer. Goes to Hashem, and Hashem says, Pesach Sheni, 1 month from now, on the 14th of Iyar, all the people who are either Tamei Meis or too far from Yerushalayim get to bring a Korban Pesach. If they don't, then they're Chayiv Karis. One of only two mitzvah to say you're Chayiv Karis for. What's the other one? Brit Milah. Okay, yes, what do you want to say? Chayiv Karis, that I don't really know exactly how to translate it, but it is some sort of heavenly death. Okay? One opinion I saw, as opposed to Misa B'day Shemayim, is you're cut off in this world and in the next. Others want to say, it depends at what age you die. There's different opinions, how exactly to define it.
I thought you always get a peaceful
life. I'm just saying, there's an opinion. Kari Sikha Reis means it was in this world and the next. Theo, you wanted to say something?
So Eve didn't go back to the Beit HaMikdash to eat Korban Pesach, Sheni. They were five times.
Right, you had 1 month to take care of it. If you didn't do it then, Chayiv Karis.
Is that so part of the day when the Mashiach comes?
I guess so. Now,
why don't you keep Pesach Sheni?
There's nothing. Pesach Sheni today is a minute. We don't say Tachnun. Okay. Most normal people don't say Tachnun. And some people have a minute to eat matzah. I don't really like matzah, even the week I have to eat it in Pesach, so I certainly don't eat it a month later. But in the Shiva that bring out all the leftover matzah that people didn't eat, and people go and pig out and eat matzah 1 month later, and I say gesundheit hate. Now, next, eat in good health. Now, usually the cloud covered the Mishkan by day and fire in the evening. When the cloud arose, It was time to travel. The Sforno talks about the Mesiris Nefesh that was involved in this. It could be they just finally got to a really good place, an oasis of sorts in the Midbar. They just unpacked. They're so excited. The kids start running off into little springs of water. And then the cloud picks up the next day. What? We just got here, right? And vice versa. Get to some place. Mosquitoes all over the place. There's not a piece of, you know, there's no shade from the tree. You know, when's the cloud going to move? It's not moving. It's not moving. Day after day after day. Says Sforno, we lived our life based on whatever Kadosh Baruch Hu said. Stay. Move. Now, Moshe was commanded to make two silver trumpets, and they were blown to gather the people. And it was blown on days of joy. Now, there were gather people, days of joy, and when it's time to move. And there were different blasts, obviously, for, you know, everyone knew what each blast meant. That was obvious. After about a year being at Har Sinai, on the 20th of Sivan, right, a little bit over a year, we got the Torah ready. On Shavuos, a little bit more than a year later, the cloud lifted. And on this occasion, the Aaron led the way. Also, we saw, those of us who learned Navi, when we entered into Eretz Yisrael, the Aaron led the way. So it's pretty cool. It's sort of like when HaKadosh Baruch Hu escorted us away from Har Sinai and escorts us into Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise, we had said before that sort of the Aaron was in the middle and all the tribes surrounded it when they moved. But at this particular time, the Aaron led the way away from Har Sinai. Yeah. No, it was just time. Moshe then prays for our enemies to be scattered and Israel returns safely. Theo? You have a question?
Maybe, yeah. Like, can I have a question? Do you think that the fact that we move with the
clouds?
Is a training for the Jewish people that will
be moving around?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question. Look, the goal was not to have to be there for 40 years. You know, spoiler, we're going to mess that up soon. But at this point, we thought we were just going into Eretz Yisrael. The year, I guess, was for us to learn the Torah. We're at Har Sinai. We learned the Torah. Now we're ready to enter Eretz Yisrael. We didn't plan on having a delay. So before going, Moshe pleads with Yitro, his father-in-law, to accompany them to Eretz Yisrael, and it's unclear if he agrees or not. Okay, according to the Ramban, he agrees. According to Sforno, he does not. Now, this tefillah that Moshe said are two psukim that are surrounded by inverted nuns. Anyone's ever lain Parsha Balotcha or gotten Aliyah, so you know these two psukim, they have these inverted nuns that sort of act as parentheses. According to the Gemara in Shavuos, Kuftet Vav, Kuftet Zayin, they should be seen as parentheses. Now, what does that mean? According to Rebbe, those psukim are a separate book of Chumash. Really, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi says, there are seven books of Chumash. Obviously, it wouldn't be called Chumash anymore. It would be seven. It would be Shvush or something like that. But there are seven books of Chumash. You have Bereshis, Shmos, Vayikra. Then you have Bamidbar Chelek 1, Bamidbar Chelek 2, which is only two psukim, and Bamidbar Chelek 3, everything after those two psukim. Then you have Dvarim. So I'd have seven books of... This is what Rebbe says. Why? Why need for a separate book? Because right before the inverted nuns, there is excitement in the camp. They're ready for the journey. Moshe's talking to Yitro, saying, let's go. And after the inverted nuns, there is a total mood change. There is frustration. There is depression. Moshe even gets suicidal. Yep. He says to God, just kill me already. Okay? So what happened? Rav Soloveitchik explains beautifully. As we will see, they complain. We'll get to that. But what Moshe realizes is there was a need that this generation had for pleasure, for hedonism, which he understood was far worse than paganism. Paganism, okay, you think there's a avodah zarah, we'll show you that there's no avodah zarah. Hedonism, pleasure seeking, it's so difficult to change that attitude. They should have at this moment had lofty aspirations, but instead they were fixated on steak and French fries. Right? That's what they were looking for. They were not far enough removed from Egyptian culture, and Moshe knew this generation was not going to enter Eretz Israel, and therefore his depression. So why a separate book? This was the book that was supposed to be written. What is the first pasuk in this parentheses? Vayehi ben so Aharon. Vayom Moshe, right? Now, scatter the enemies. This was the book about our entering Eretz Israel. What's the next pasuk? Uvnucha Yomar. And now we rest, we encamp, we finished conquering Eretz Israel, and we live happily ever after. That book was not written. That book was not written. That should have been the book of Kibbutz Galiot and Geula, and Moshe would have been the Mashiach. Okay? But there is hope. What? This is the book that should have been written and never was written, but there is hope. Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Gemara says in the future this book will be written. So may we be zocha to see that book written, right? I feel that we started writing the book, right? Bezrat Hashem, we'll get to the Uvnucha Yomar, and we'll get there. Now, amen. The people begin to complain. This is the part that Moshe realizes generation not going in. Now why? It's not so clear. It is clear God gets angry. And God begins to destroy the edges of the camp. Now what is the edges of the camp? So Rashi gives two ideas. Either means the Erev Rav, those that like tacked on from Egypt and said, oh, we want to convert, you know, the fair weather fans, oh, the Jews are winning, I'll join their team. And they really weren't so sincere. Or the leaders. He's not happy with the way the Jews are acting. It means the leaders are at fault. So two very different ideas, but he's destroying the edges of the camp until Moshe davened and God calms down. Then we have another complaint. This time it's about the man. They remember the good old days in Egypt. They requested meat to eat. Now, it's a strange thing, this nostalgia of meat. I mean, they were slaves, right? So were they eating steak? Right? Were they going out to restaurants all the time? What is this? So sometimes nostalgia is rosy, and if you ever had something good, you sort of like just remember the good and you don't remember the bad. But you could also say that either as slaves they were allowed to eat while they were working, and they remembered feeling satiated. Some people complained that the man, God did it for our benefit, went right to, you know, we ate it and went exactly to every body part that needed it, and they never had to excrete. They didn't even need to go to the bathroom because there was no waste. The man was perfect. And therefore they never really felt full, and maybe they felt when they were slaves, they were eating, they're picking stuff that they're eating. Or another idea, which also makes sense, they actually did feed the slaves. Why? So they should be strong. Right? They fed the slaves, so they should be strong. So maybe they do remember having eaten such good food. Maybe they were fed steak, because after all, they were going to be working. Maybe. Yeah.
It wasn't their goal. The goal was the destruction of
the... No. Paro's goal was at first to have them slaves. They were slaves. So if this is the case, maybe they were keeping them strong. Maybe. But the wording doesn't say that. In the wording, it seems as if Hitavu leta'ava. They longed for desires. It's an interesting thing. What does this mean? And this explains God's response. Moshe was so frustrated with the request for meat that he says to God, just kill me, please, and put me out of my misery. And instead, God says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to appoint 70 elders. How is that going to help? They're asking for meat, right? What's going on? So the understanding, Rav Soloveitchik explains, is they were bored. And they were looking for something that would be entertaining. Something that would give them, I don't know, something to do. So 70 elders, these are not judges. We already have judges from Parsha Yitro. These were inspirational leaders, if we use modern terminology, influencers. Okay? And their job was to try to influence the Jews to do good. And now, each person is influenced by another person. If I speak to some person, another person might say, oh, He doesn't really speak to me. I need to find somebody else. So there are 70 different people to help Moshe get the message across, to lead a Torah lifestyle, to make it more exciting. And that was the job of these 70 elders. They weren't really asking for meat. They need to fill up their day with something to do. Which explains also why when Eldad and Medad get Nevuah, and Yoshua says, you know, my master cursed them, Moshe says, halavai, everyone should have Nevuah. Because the idea was, then there'll be more people that could spread the message, and everyone would feel that they're leading a meaningful life. Okay, Ariel, your hand up first.
Like, yeah, 70 people, though, distributed amongst, like, 600,000 men.
Yeah, I don't know. 30 million. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they train others, and, you know, you teach, and he passes on. I don't know. But I guess just more than just having Moshe. Yeah. 70 times better. Yeah.
That's what else is one to go. That's prophecy.
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 Yeah. Now, but in response to the meat, God actually says, you want meat? I'll give you meat. I'll give you meat that's coming out of your noses. 30 straight days, they're going to be eating meat. God causes a strong wind to uproot quail from the sea and brings it to the camp, and they're collecting day and night. The instigators, they're killed on the spot, and the rest ate 30 straight days until they were throwing up, till they were nauseous. Okay, I knew you guys were sitting there saying, I don't know, I have no problem, I could eat meat for 30 straight days now. But anyway, this is at least what it says in the Pesukim.
Did it blow up?
No, no. I don't know, no. Now, they also ate man. They ate man, and they had also this quail type of bird. Okay. Yes.
What is this all? It's really like all of Bnei Israel. No, like,
yeah, I don't know. A lot of times, you know, the Torah writes, does it mean everyone? Does it even mean the majority? Does it mean a strong minority? It could be it's the latter. Okay, in the Sefer called Dorot HaRishonim, he explains, like, when it says Avodah Zarah was rampant in the time of Bayis Rishon, says, I don't know. You know, I don't know if we'll ever get to it at the rate we're going in our Navi class, but Yehu is going to round up all the old day Avodah Zarah. Right? And it doesn't seem like it was that many people. Right? So, no, I don't know. I'm just saying. So is it possible that, I mean, like saying, sometimes in order to get a point across, you speak in hyperbole, right? Let's say my kids are fighting near the stairs. They go, you know, throw your sister downstairs, get up, what, are you going to crack or break her neck? You know, like, now, most probably, even if she fell down the stairs, she'd just get a bruise, right? But you speak in hyperbole. Could it be as well? The Navi says, all of, you know, the streets were filled with blood. Avodah Zarah was everywhere you looked. Behind every door was Avodah Zarah. Was there some blood on the streets for murder? Yeah. Was there some Avodah Zarah behind doors? Yeah. Was it every door? Was blood flowing through the streets? Probably not. You know, so I'm saying it's possible here that not everyone felt this way, but at least a sizable people complained. Enough that it seemed to register, like Bnei Israel complained. Also, it could be that once some start to complain, people join on the bandwagon, you know? Yeah.
I may suppose on this topic, but there is definitely some sarcasm and hyperbole in Torah. And he cited the girl and the two talking about the graves. Well, there are no graves for us in Egypt. It's not like they're saying, can I just check? Well, the only reason we're here is just because we didn't have enough graves in
right.
Egypt. It's because they were saying, you know,
right. Now, the last part of Baalot Cha is a very interesting story, and that is the Lashon Hara spoken by Miriam about Moshe. Miriam goes to Aaron and speaks about Moshe's wife, the Isha Kushit. Now, according to Rashi, this is Tzipora. Tzipora. And according to the Midrash that Rashi quotes, Tzipora is complaining, sort of, to Miriam that, you know, once Moshe, you know, since Moshe is on this high level of Nevuah, I never get to sleep with him anymore. And Miriam's saying, what, that's what he told you? And like she goes, I don't know, I'm a Nevi'ah, you're a Navi. Like, we have normal relations with our spouses. Why didn't Moshe tell her that line? Like, what's that all about? to which God calls them out and gives them a talking to, that Moshe's Nebuah is not on their level. They're in a different league than Moshe Rabbeinu. And that is, that's Rashi's view on it. Interesting view of the Rashbam is, this is Rashbam, which is Mr. Pshuto Shel Mikra, he quotes a Midrash. Now why would, Pshuto Shel Mikra means like the simple reading of the text. The Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, says Rashi didn't keep to his, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. He says the point of his parish, of his commentary, is to give you Pshuto Shel Mikra. And he now veers from it so many times, I have to write a real commentary that does that. Which would mean he would never quote Midrasha. And yet here he does. Why? Because he's bothered by the word Isha Kushit. Kush is usually referred to as what country?
Africa.
Good. Yeah, Ethiopia. Yeah. More, you know. And Tzipora, she's from Midian. It should be a little bit strange to refer to Moshe's wife as the Isha Kushit. So Rashi has to say, oh, it means she was as beautiful, her beauty was as obvious as a black person's skin is obviously black and not white. Okay, it's a bit of a stretch though, right? So the Rashbam says, I'm forced to bring a Midrash. And the Midrash says, and answers a different question, which we spoke about once earlier, where was Moshe when he left Egypt till he got to Midian? And there is a Midrash that says he stopped in Ethiopia for many decades before he made his way to Midian, which would explain how Moshe left at somewhat of a young age and returns with a baby when he's 80 years old. So if he stopped in Ethiopia, that's all okay, because he didn't get to marry Tzipora till many, many years later. So what's this? Miriam says to Aaron, did you hear that Moshe's got a wife stashed away in Ethiopia? It's the craziest thing. I just heard about that. Did you know that? So according to the Rashbam, that is the Lashon Hara. It's not about Tzipora. It's like, did you know he's got a wife in Ethiopia? So that's the Rashbam's view on it. But, yes?
Who says that?
There's a Midrash that says it, and this is Rashbam's reading.
Moshe, that when he's in Ethiopia?
After he left Egypt, he went to Ethiopia, it's also in Africa, before he made his way up.
Miriam says
to Aaron, did you know that our brother's got another wife stashed away in Ethiopia?
Why now?
She just found out about it. I don't know why she found out about it now, but she did. This is Rashbam's view, and it's based on the word Isha Kushit. But getting back to Miriam's
It's not possible that Tzipora was Kushit also?
No, because Kushit would refer to an Ethiopian person.
Maybe she was black, but I don't
know. Okay, so I'm saying like she wouldn't be. It would not make sense that she was according to the Rashbam. Okay, this is his reading of it. Even Rashi doesn't think so. He has to come up with this idea. She's as beautiful, as obvious as black is different. Yes. Okay, like I said, even Rashi doesn't try to give that answer. So Rashbam feels the need to give a different idea. Getting back to the Rashi's view. Wait. She's saying Lashon Hara. Yes, what do you want to say?
How did he get to Africa?
He left Egypt. And he went east.
Yeah, but
he made his way to Africa. No, can make your way.
Huh?
Yeah, can make his way.
And where's Midian?
More like in the Jordan area, near closer to Israel. Okay. Now, according to Rashi, Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about her brother, the most humble person ever to live. The Ramban says he even heard it and didn't say anything. Okay?
She's the most humble person?
No, Moshe was. Moshe heard the Lashon Hara, didn't respond. Pointing to the Gemara, not only did Miriam get Sarat, Aaron did as well. Always taught, also listen to the Lashon Hara. So we're told that Miriam got Sarat, she's the one that spoke it, you're not supposed to listen to it. According to Rabbi Akiva in the Gemara, Aaron got Sarat as well. Yeah?
Shouldn't he defend himself in that scenario?
Say so he doesn't defend himself. And this is what happens. God calls them out. According to the Gemara, he waits till Miriam and Aaron are having relations with their spouses, and then says, all right, I need you guys out here right now. And they're it's a little awkward, and they're like, you know, running out, the little blanket around themselves, you know. And God is saying, this is why Moshe is different than you. Moshe's on call 24/7. He's not like you guys, that if you bring music and you listen and maybe get into prophetic trance, then maybe you'll understand, you'll hear or get a vision. Moshe speaks, I speak to Moshe like, you know, I have on speed dial. I just like press, boom, he got a phone call from me. He cannot be caught having a relationship with his wife. He has to be on call 24/7. And that's why Moshe's different. And this is Rav Soloveitchik's understanding of the sin of Miriam. The sin of Miriam was thinking that Moshe... Here. I remember when I moved to Neve Daniel in Israel, so some guy was telling me about how great Maccabi Tel Aviv is, the Israel's basketball team. And I said... He said, oh, they're so... I said, they're not good. They're made up of washed... Guys that couldn't play in the NBA. The guy was telling me, oh, Maccabi Tel Aviv could take on the Lakers and the Celtics. I said, no, they couldn't. They couldn't beat a good Division I basketball team. They're made up of players that couldn't even, you know, make it in the league. And I feel that that's the same problem of Miriam. Miriam said, I'm a Navi. Aaron's a Navi. Moshe Navi. He's a little bit better. All right. But we're in the same league. Wrong. You're not in the same league. Understand that you're not in the same league. That was the sin of Miriam. Now, what was her punishment? She got sarat. She is out. She is quarantined for 7 days. And listen to this amazing idea. According to the Aruch Chaim, there was so much respect for Miriam that while she's quarantined, she's out of the machaneh, the cloud lifted. And Moshe says, all right, guys, time to go. And everyone said, we're not leaving. We're not leaving without Miriam. And oh, the cloud lifted. They waited 7 days, says the Aruch Chaim, until Miriam was able to enter back into the machaneh. They said, okay, now we're ready to go.
They went against Hashem.
Well, that's what the Aruch Chaim says. Pretty brazen idea, but it's pretty cool. It says what kind of cover they had for Miriam, and Aviyah, that the cloud lifted, at least according to the Aruch Chaim, and they were like, all right, we'll slowly start getting our things together. You know, a delay till, okay, she's back, okay, we can go. So, but I don't know. I think it's a pretty cool statement by the Aruch Chaim. When I saw that, I said, that is cool. Yeah, what are you saying?
So, meaning that Hashem would assume that Yimul could go without Miriam?
I don't know. Like I said, it doesn't say this in Pesukim.
Okay.
It doesn't say it in Pesukim. But the Aruch Chaim says it. It's an interesting idea of the Aruch Chaim to show what kind of kavod. They waited for Miriam, meaning they waited even though the cloud said, move on. That's how the parsha ends. All right. Shkayach.